The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Good morning and welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR in Lee. It almost feels criminal cutting off that song, that Motley Crue song. Feels a little criminal, but I don't have control over that. Welcome this morning. We're going to take a quick look at the weather before we move on with the program.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, sunny this morning, then mostly cloudy with a chance of snow showers this afternoon. Not as cold with highs in the mid-20s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour, increasing to south 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of snow 40%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. A chance of snow showers in the evening. Not as cold with lows in the lower 20s. Southwest wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Chance of snow 40%. Thursday, partly sunny. A chance of snow showers in the morning. Not as cool with highs in the upper 30s. Temperature falling to around 30 in the afternoon. Southwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of snow 30%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
It is currently a nice, warm, balmy negative 5 in downtown Pittsfield. Negative 5. It's going to get into the 20s today. I've never thought I'd be so excited about 20 degrees, but we will absolutely take it right now. Because the last couple of days have been brutal. I'm just tired of it. Each and every year. I get closer to saying screw it and moving to Florida. They got falling iguanas down there, so who knows? Where do you even live anymore? My guest this morning is Mike Kozik. He hosts The Blade here on 89.7 WTBR. You can catch that Monday afternoons from 12 to 2. But we have him today because he is an early recovery alcoholic. And, Mike, why don't you tell your story, and we'll sort of jump off from there.
Morning, Bob.
Morning.
My story is, I started late in life with my addiction to alcohol. I have no idea why it started, but it started. And heavy drinking for probably about 4 years, and finally hit rock bottom, which isn't a place to be. And sometimes you find out rock bottom has a trap door, and you can fall through that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Got myself in a little bit of trouble. I won't get into that. That's very personal.
Sure.
I ended up, the day I left court, I ended up walking from the Pittsfield Courthouse to Berkshire Medical Center. It was time. I needed to start recovery. So I walked from the courthouse. I got to the hospital and checked in, said I wanted to go into the McGee unit. I was really, really sick. The nurse took my blood sugar. My blood sugar was sky high. It's a wonder I'm still alive. I ended up spending 3 days in a hospital being treated for my diabetes before I was transferred to McGee. I was in McGee for 5 days. I got out, and I started the outpatient program at the Alternative Living Center in North Adams, and I've been there I'm on my second stint. I did my first 90 days. I graduated from the program on Christmas Eve. I've been sober for 127 days. Today is 127 days, and the program's doing me so well, I asked for a 90-day extension, and every morning we do 3 hours, and I'm there Monday to Friday, and the program is really beneficial to me, and it's helped. I've gained a lot that I've lost back, especially my family. I actually had lost my daughter, a relationship with my daughter, and I'm getting that back, and I understand the damage I did, and I can never fix that, but I can fix going forward, staying sober.
So you weren't a big drinker in your younger days, is what you're saying.
I hadn't drank, well, like every kid, you know, you party. But mm-hmm. I had a career. I had a great job. I had a career. Raised a family. I have a special needs son, which, you know, took up all of my time. And there was never a time where I could drink or wanted to drink. I just didn't. And then, you know, he got stable. Both my kids are adults now. And my biggest guess is I had gastric bypass surgery in 2020. and I've lost 140 pounds. And they say about 25 to 30% of people that have that surgery will turn to alcohol. It's replacing...
Really?
It's a staggering number. It's replacing, they say, one addiction for another. Replaced food, you know, alcohol for food for alcohol. And it started, you know, one or two drinks. But the funny thing is, well, it's not really funny, but the... After the gastric bypass surgery, when you drink, it hits your system immediately because it goes right into your small intestine. Might as well just pour it into your liver.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can have a half a beer and you get a pretty good buzz going. It's crazy. But if I told you, I'm not going to get into my war stories and tell you how much I was drinking, but I'll tell you off the air, Bob. It's a ridiculous number. But, you know, I've gotten the help. I've gotten the support. I've gotten the counseling. I am not doing the 12-step program through AA. I've got my own recovery plan. I'm not going to begrudge anybody that does that because it is a great thing, but mm-hmm. It's not for me. I'm not a big God person, per se. I was raised Catholic, and I do believe in God and stuff like that, but it's just not a program for me, not at my age. It's just something I don't want to do, but I've got a recovery plan. I've got a recovery coach. Like I said, I'm still going to the program, and like I said, today's 127 days sober, and I'm very proud of that. I got my certificate of completion, and while I was doing that, just for fun, I got an anger management certificate as well.
Oh, okay.
That was just on. Something to do. It was in there, so I said, might as well do it. Counts as a meeting, so.
I mean, so the anger management, did you have an anger problem as well?
I did not have an anger problem. I just found the classes were very... informative. You find a lot out about yourself too, you know, why you get mad, how you get mad. There's several different types of anger, rage, and, you know, just all sorts of stuff. Here's another thing too. They've done 260 studies for people with traumatic brain injuries. 94% of the people in our group have had some sort of brain injury, which is a staggering number. And it's the most in the country of any group that's done this. It's a ridiculous number, 94%. And I actually tested, and it came up that I had. And I figured I did from, you know, all the years of working and stuff and hitting my head and things like that, that something had happened. But, you know, when I read the results, it's like, wow. Go ahead.
Now, let's take a step back here because you said you walked from the Pittsfield Courthouse to Berkshire Medical Center to get into McGee. Was it difficult at all to get a bed? I mean, we hear in the mental health crisis, and it's very difficult to get in to see somebody. But that doesn't seem to have been your experience.
It wasn't my experience because I started treatment in the hospital as they were treating me for diabetes. And, you know, as heavy a drinker as I was, they obviously worry about you having a seizure. Mm-hmm. So I started treatment in a hospital for that. And like I said, I was in a hospital for 3 days, and I had no problem getting a bed. They transferred me right over to McGee, and I had a bed in there. So that was a good thing, too.
Now, within McGee, did you meet other people that were going through similar things, the same thing?
I will tell you a funny, one of the nurses in there I had worked with in a previous place, and when I walked in, she's like, Mike, what are you doing here? And I said, I have a serious drinking problem. And she says, I'm going to tell you something, so do I. And we, you know, I've known her and her husband through working mm-hmm. with them, and I'm not going to mention their names or anything.
Of course, yeah, we're
not
doing that today.
And of course, you always run in, it's weird, you run into people. And it's like, holy cow, I never thought, you know, I may have a drinking problem, but this person's got an opiate problem, or, you know, they were addicted to crack cocaine or whatever. It's weird. It is, but it's humbling as well,
mm-hmm.
too. So.
And you say it's humbling, and so and this is a small community, right?
Sure. Yep.
So, you know, you've seen people that you've known within these programs. Is it... what's the phrase I'm looking for? I mean, I'm sort of an oblivious person. Mm-hmm. I come to find out that, I mean, I had no idea what you were going through. You were here at least twice a week.
Yeah.
And I'm just completely oblivious to stuff like that for some odd reason. Like, I don't understand why. Were you good at hiding it, or am I just...
No, I was very good at hiding it. Mm-hmm. The whole thing was my drinking wouldn't start until late afternoon. I had to function because of the family, because of, you know, my daily obligations and stuff like that. And the only people that knew were the people that were close to me. You know, even my best friends didn't know I had a drinking problem. Mm-hmm. They just didn't. And I did hide it well. I never came into the studio under the influence of anything. And I would never do that. I would never compromise that. I wouldn't do that to the studio. You know, this is a great facility. I love the people here. And I'm happy to be part of this family. So.
And how much has being a part of this family and being a part of WTBR helped you?
It's helped me immensely. Actually, it's actually part of my recovery plan to keep coming to do this. They know it's good for me. And, you know, like I said a few weeks ago, when I walk through that door, it's just 2 hours where nobody's bothering me. And, you know, I can just play the music and, you know, talk to the community. I love doing it. I do. And it's definitely helped in my treatment. It's going to continue to help with my treatment.
So, again, we're talking with Mike Kozik, and Mike is an alcoholic. He's 127 days sober. And, I mean, first and foremost, thank you for being a part of this. I know this is a very personal story. We talked about what a small community this is, and you've been very open on Facebook about your journey. And, I mean, you started later in life, and that was an interesting note that you said that you had the bariatric surgery, and you said one out of four?
It's about 25 to 30% of people, yeah.
That go through that, it's replacing one addiction for the other. That's
I'm going to say this as well, and I'm not going to mention her either. My ex-wife, after she had my daughter, had the bariatric surgery, and she had an addiction to alcohol as well, and that almost ruined our marriage. My alcoholism did. I threw away 32 years of marriage, but the thing, there's no silver lining to that, but she is my biggest supporter through this, and we become very close again and best friends, and you know, we've got two adult kids, and you know, we're very civil, you mm-hmm. know, and if you know, I let that happen. You know, if the drinking hadn't happened, we'd probably still be together. But the fact of the matter is that the fact that she's my biggest supporter and my daughter is my biggest supporter and I've gotten her back, but the fact that my daughter's calling me dad again is huge. You know, I messed up. I was heavily drinking all through her high school years, and I can't give her that back. And she shared a story with me on I picked her up from college the night before Thanksgiving, and she's never been open about this. And she was like, Dad, she goes, I'm really glad you're in treatment. And this was the first time she had called me Dad in a long time. She says, Dad, I'm glad you're in treatment. She goes, I want to tell you something. She goes, there were two incidences where I thought I found you dead in the basement. And that one hit home.
Mm-hmm.
That struck a chord with me. And I'm like, I'm just a dirtbag. You know, and I'm like, you know, I'm thinking that to myself. I said, I'm just a dirtbag. I did that to my daughter. I said, Dad, that's trauma I inflicted. My alcoholism inflicted that on her. And she can never unsee that, and I can never take that back. But, you know, like I said, we can mend fences going forward. And the fact that there's that love, and, you know, and that's one thing. They talk about having a higher power in AA and things like that, whether it's God, whether it, you know, it could be a tree, whatever it is for people. And I have figured out, and it's just been within the last month, that love is the ultimate higher power, and that's what's driving me to stay sober. It's the love of my family, my kids especially.
Are there still temptations?
Well, of course there are. Every now and then, you know, if you got to keep your mind occupied, you got to find something to do. There's something that'll come along and go, man, I would love to have a drink, but you got to be stronger than that. You got to have a good support network. And, you know, I've got people I can call, and it's like, you got to talk me down, you know, but the fact of the matter is I just don't want to drink anymore. You know, you got to be stronger than it. There's always the angel on the left shoulder, the devil on the right, and they're fighting with each other. And they both got good reasons, but I just don't want to do it anymore. And I'm very fortunate for the amount I was drinking in a short amount of time that I still have a healthy liver. And I can't believe that. But, you know, I've had the tests, and even the doctor said, I can't believe your liver's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably because it was just, I had started later in life. And it, you know, it was about 4.5 years of really heavy drinking. It was every day. I got blackout drunk. I would say 5 days a week. It was nuts. Wow. It was nuts. But, you know, I'm healthy. I do it's medical assisted therapy. I get a Vivitrol injection. I get it once a month, and that helps with cravings and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
So it works. It does work.
And how important is it that, you know, you said your ex-wife went through the exact same thing, mm-hmm. and she's sort of supporting you through the recovery. I mean, you don't really hear that too often, but how, like, important is that you are close and she is able to support you having gone through the same thing?
It's important to me because she knows what I'm going through. She mm-hmm. does. I don't know how she did it. She quit cold turkey. Just cold turkey, and she just up and stopped. And I was glad at the time she did. And, you know, we continued on with life, and, you know, her quitting saved the marriage for that time. But there were a lot of internal struggles, too, with, you know, raising a family and having a special needs kid. There was a lot of fighting with that. And it was just a struggle. And, you know, we lived, I would say, as roommates for about the last 8 years or so. And then, you know, like I said, I turned to the drinking, and it was actually me that walked out. I said, I can't do this anymore. I've had enough. And there was just a lot that went on between, she had a traumatic brain injury, and, you know, I took care of her for years. And it was just a struggle on me because I had my own issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this isn't really funny. I had a stroke back in, it was 2019, a very mild one. And I wasn't drinking then. I started drinking after that. And like I said, I don't know why I started. There's never a reason for why. There's always an answer to how. And it's always the first choice. You know, it's a choice to pick up that first drink. I do believe that. And, you know, with any substance, it's a choice. You want to do it or you don't. But when it starts getting heavy and there's an addiction, it does become a disease. It does. It's a mental disease. It really is. Some people call it a sickness, but the studies show it's definitely a disease. People can argue back and forth as to what it is, but it is what it is.
How much do you think the pandemic exacerbated the situation?
Well, we had just talked about this the other day, and it's funny. During the pandemic, if everybody remembers, the package stores stayed open.
Oh, yeah.
They were essential. they were essential. It's because, you know, if people stop drinking and, you know, you're going to have a hospital full of people with seizures.
Right.
You know, and at the time, they needed the beds for the COVID patients. And, the pandemic definitely contributed to, especially being isolated, you know, contributed to the alcoholism. You know, you run out, you throw your mask on, you go in, you buy your alcohol, you go home. You couldn't do anything. And it was just, you know. People, and I know a lot of people started drinking because of the pandemic. I see it. I see it just within my group. Here's a stigma I had before I went into these. The treatment centers around here, I was under the impression, and this is a sad impression, I think a lot of people around here have the same thing, that these are all methadone or Suboxone clinics. They're not. The facility I go to has none of that on hand. It's actually just a treatment facility. We go in, and there's two groups. There's a morning group and an afternoon group, and there's about 25 people in each group. And there's an inpatient program there where people live on campus, and I was supposed to do that, and I opted not to. And seeing what my treatment, because I'm outpatient and the people there, the rules are more lax for me than they are for the people there. But for me, I think living there would be like a dorm setting. And then at my age, I'm too old for that. I'm 50. Right. I'm going to be 55 next month. So, it's something I couldn't do. But I've made friends. I've made good friends. You want to meet some honest people, you need to sit through an AA meeting. It's... You know, people spill their guts to these groups. And, you know, and it's one of the only groups I've ever sat in, or any group per se, where you absolutely feel no judgment from anybody, because everybody's got a different story, whether you're an alcoholic or you're addicted to some other form of drug. You know, everybody's got a story.
Now, you said you started drinking, you know, towards the beginning of the pandemic after your minor stroke mm-hmm. in 2019. Was there a point that you realized, you know, I mean, obviously you probably went through the, and I am a cigarette smoker. And, you know, you go through that initial phase of, you know, bah, I can quit anytime. I mean, did you even have to think about that? Or you're just like, I'm just having a few beers. It's all good.
No, there comes a time, you know, you'll say to yourself, I knew I had a problem because I was hearing it. I heard it from everybody. I won't say I was in denial because I knew I had a drinking problem. There became a point I didn't care. And that's where the problem really was. I just didn't care. I think I was most addicted to the quick buzz. Like I said, after the gastric bypass surgery, you have, you know, a half a beer and the buzz is there. And it's a really good buzz. And, but yeah, there was always a time I said, I need to stop today. I'm going to get treatment today. And today would come, tomorrow would come, and I wasn't getting treatment. And what it came down to was I got in a little bit of trouble and I said, it's time. It's time. You know, like I said, rock bottom. I hit rock bottom and then I fell through the trap door.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. It's like, I need to do this. I need to do this for myself. I need to do this for my family. I lost both my parents young to different diseases. Neither one of them had an addiction. But I do not want to be 6 feet under in my 50s. And that's about what it came, that. And, you know, I started realizing how much I had lost, and, you know, I need to get some of this back. You know, there's friends I have lost because of my alcoholism, and, you know, I've tried to mend them fences, and I've done all I can do. And I understand if they don't want me back, I get it. I completely understand it. But knowing that I did that damage and I, you know, lost some friendships through that hurts me. So, you know, but I did it to myself.
And, I mean, most people don't recognize that. You know, they may have pushed too far. You know, I know a lot of people say, I apologized. I don't know what the big deal is. You know, it's time to get over it. I apologize. But you recognize that, you know, well, maybe I did push this a little too far to a point of, you know, it's just never coming back.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's all part of the 12-step program. You know, they want you to, first you got to surrender to it. And, you know, they want you to ask God to guide you through all this, and, you know, and I'm in a way I'm kind of doing that, but, you know, when you do people dirty and you do them wrong, I mean, with any addiction comes lying. I never stole from anybody, but yes, I would lie to people. You know, I would be drinking and be telling my wife I'm not drinking, and she's like, you got a beer in your hand. I'm like, but I'm not drinking. You know, and it just stuff
so literally, like, while you had a beer, yeah, in your hand, she's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's crazy how the addicted mind works. It is, you know. Yeah, you know, people lie, cheat, and steal. But like I said, I've never lied, or I have lied, but I've never stolen from anybody to, you know, get alcohol or anything like that. Nor would I. That's just not who I am.
Have you ever, you know, you've gone to the liquor store, you pull into the parking spot. I mean, have you ever had sort of that, you know, angel devil discussion, you know, while you were going through alcoholism? You're sitting in the parking lot and it's like, I'm going in. Or have you, like, sat in the car for 20 minutes trying to debate with yourself whether or not you should actually go in?
During the alcoholism, the angel was never there. It was always the devil you were listening. I mean, he would be standing there and the devil would be saying, don't listen to that guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You know what you want to do. You're a grown man. And I listened to that, and there came that time where it's like, I got to stop listening to that guy because this is going to kill me. I mean, alcohol, it's a very powerful drug, and it is a drug. It's a very powerful drug, and it can make you do a lot of weird things, you know, a lot of things. I mean, I never got violent or anything like that, but, you know, that can happen. You can just make dumb decisions.
So, mm-hmm.
And one thing I never did do, and I can honestly say this, and there's a reason why I never did it. I never did drive under the influence, and I wouldn't. And that reason is my mother lost her brother on Christmas morning to a drunk driving accident years ago. So that's a promise I always made my mom.
So the majority of your drinking was done at home, is what you're saying?
It was absolutely done at home. I would never go. I don't want to go to bars. I would do it at home. You know, I had a quote-unquote man cave. I don't like that term, but I don't know what else to call it. And I had a I had a huge record collection. I had a nice stereo setup. I had about almost 8,000 records, Bob. And I would, you know, at the time I wasn't drinking that heavy. I was drinking. I would go down there every night. I would, you know, just spin some records and, you know, have a couple of beers, and that would be it. Then about 3 years ago, and this hurts, my hot water tank burst in my finished basement, and I lost all my vinyl.
Oh, no.
All of it. All of it. All 8,000 records. I ended up, I had to rent a dumpster. I threw them all. That hurt. And after that, the drinking had gotten worse because the vinyl was actually a good addiction. I was addicted to collecting records. I was. And when that went away, it was like, part of my life went away. It did. I mean, that was a lifetime of collecting. And like I said, I had a great collection. And, you know, to pick all that stuff up, have all that stuff thrown out, it was like, now what? And the drinking got worse after that because I had lost something that I loved. And it was like, I don't know what to do. You know, I'll never be able to replace that. You know, there was thousands and thousands of dollars in records there. And that one stung.
Oh, yeah. I can absolutely imagine.
I mean, I've seen a collection here. This one dwarfs mine, but I had a great collection.
All right, we're going to take a time out here. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour. We're here with Mike Kozik this morning. I'm Bob Hack here on Morning Drive. And Mike is 127 days into his sobriety journey, and we really appreciate him joining us and telling the story. And we'll talk more with Mike coming up after the top of the hour, after a short time out here on 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com.
PCTV Select is a great way to watch local content without having a cable subscription. You can keep up with the latest of what's going on in your community from anywhere in the world. And it's available for free right now. Watch live events in full HD on your TV, on your computer, or on the go with your mobile device. Or watch our large library of on-demand video programs anytime that's convenient for you. No more waiting until it's on TV. Did we mention it's free? PCTV Select is everywhere you need to be.
El Departamento de Salud de Pittsfield realiza mensualmente clínicas de salud gratuitas en el Centro Cristiano, los apartamentos Edward Arms, Capitol Square y la Iglesia Congregacional del Sur. Ofrecemos chequeo de signos vitales, revisión de medicamentos, evaluaciones médicas y proveemos información sobre los recursos disponibles en la comunidad. Para información, llamar al 413-499-9411.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Join Peter and Jessica to relive the magic of Beatlemania every Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. For 5 decades, the Fab Four, where together or on their own, has changed the world of music. Tune in to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 FM, Tuesdays, 4 to 6 p.m.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
We are back on Morning Drive, just about 8 o'clock here in the morning. On a Wednesday here in the Berkshires, we'll take a look at the forecast, and we'll have more with our guest, Mike Kozik.
Pembrokeshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, sunny this morning, then mostly cloudy with a chance of snow showers this afternoon. Not as cold with highs in the mid-20s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour, increasing to south 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of snow 40%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. A chance of snow showers in the evening. Not as cold with lows in the lower 20s. Southwest wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Chance of snow 40%. Thursday, partly sunny. A chance of snow showers in the morning. Not as cool with highs in the upper 30s. Temperature falling to around 30 in the afternoon. Southwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of snow 30%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
We are at minus 5, baby, in downtown Pittsfield. But hey, we're going to get up to 21 today. Whoop, whoop. That's going to be super duper exciting to, you know, be able to walk outside for 2 seconds without feeling like you got punched in the face. So yeah, and it's even going to the 30s tomorrow. Who thought we'd be excited about that?
We'd be begging for the 30s.
And then Saturday's supposed to be the coldest day in a million years, I guess. Oh, who knows? Mike Kozik, our guest this morning, is 127 days sober. Thank you for coming on and sharing your journey.
Thank you for asking me to come on, Bob.
I mean, particularly this early, I just don't know the parameters. You said when we initially discussed this idea, you had to talk to your sponsor. I mean, is this atypical this early in your recovery to come on and open up and talk about it?
I don't have a sponsor. I had to talk to my, I talked to my counselor about coming on, and he told me to do what I want. You know, it's my story, and, you know, being part of the WTBR family, it's important that I came on here because, and I'm actually glad that I told everybody here that I had the problem, and, you know, there was no judgment here. I mean, everybody's been supportive of me. I can honestly say this. I think my shows have gotten better since I've gotten sober, too. I know they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, I never came in here under the influence. But, you know, when you're an alcoholic, I could be sitting where you're sitting right now in that chair at that board and just be like, when I get out of here, it's time to start drinking. And I would think that the whole show. And
so there was a lot of looking forward to the drinking.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, you know, in my drinking, like I said, I would get up in the morning. I had to function, you know, get the kids off, get my daughter off to college, get my son to work or whatever. And, you know, that was never a big deal. My family was always my, you know, important to me and my first obligation. You know, then I had my things. I had to do my daily appointments or whatnot. And like I said, my drinking would start late in the day, come, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. That's my time. And I would literally get mad if people would ask me to do something. You know, can you do this? Can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? And it's like, oh, you're cutting into my drinking time. And, you know, a normal person doesn't think like that. But, you know, somebody, any form of addict thinks like that. You know, this is my time. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do the other thing. And, you know, the fact that you get mad that a loved one will ask you to do something and you're choosing alcohol over that is, there's a problem right then and there.
Now, you had mentioned, what's the difference between somebody, you know, who hasn't had the bariatric surgery and has had it as far as, you know, where the alcohol absorbs?
After the bariatric surgery, like I said, when you start drinking, you know, you can have half of anything, you know, half a beer, half a glass of wine or whatnot, and it pours, right? You might as well just pour it into your liver. And the buzz comes on almost instantaneous. And, you know, I would drink till I passed out, and I would get up and, you know, go to the bathroom, and I'd feel sober again. Whether I was or not, I don't know. You know, I never tested my own BAC, but mm-hmm. It would be, you'd say to yourself, you know, take a nap for 3 or 4 hours, get up and, you know, I've slept it off. I can get drunk again. And I would. And it'd just be a vicious cycle. You know, I would drink till 10, 11 o'clock at night, go to bed, you know, sleep through the night, get up and, you know, just function and then come around noontime or so, I said, well, it's time to run to the package store, and, you know, I'll be drinking in a few hours. And, you know, to look forward to, you know, saying, I'm just going to go drink today, and it, and every day doing that, it's, there's a problem. And I recognized I had the problem, and like I said, I accepted I had a problem. I won't say I was in denial, because I knew I had a problem. I always knew I needed help, but I didn't want people to tell me I needed help. I did not want to hear that from anybody. And like I said, something had happened where finally it was time for me to get the help. And I'm glad I got the help. I really am.
Do you feel like you might have gotten help sooner if people weren't pestering you? I know, like, people are stubborn. I know I'm stubborn in certain circumstances where people tell me I need to do something. And I'm just like, you know what? Screw you. I'm going to wait 2 months until you get off my case about it. And then I'll go do it, because I don't want you to think you told me to.
I had said to myself probably 100 times, today's the day I'm going to go get help. And then, you know, whether it was my ex-wife or my kids or whoever, they would say, you know, you need to get some help. I don't want to hear that. I know I need to get help. I'm not getting help because you're telling me to get help. I'll get help on my own time. And even my sister, you know, she knew I had the problem too. And she was like, you need to get help. You need to do this. You need to do that. You need to do the other thing. And it's like, I don't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. So it was more, I think, more out of spite.
It's
more out of spite. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. I'm a grown man. So, like I said, when the time came, when I finally realized it was time for me to get help, was I had gotten arrested for a minor offense. It wasn't a DUI or anything like that, but I'm not going to get into that. The second time, when that cell door shut behind me and I sat in there all night, it was like, I need to get some help. And like, I went to court the next morning, and like, I walked from court right to the hospital and started there, and I was on the road to recovery. So there's no looking back. I don't want to drink. I just, mm-hmm. you know, like you asked me earlier, do I have cravings? Sure, every now and then you have a craving, but you can't give into it. You can't give into it. You got to have a good support network. You know, I've got friends I can call, people I can call, you know, talk me down or find something else. So you got to find something to occupy your mind, because if you start thinking about it and you're not doing something, you're either going to give into it or it's going to drive you nuts. So one thing that I didn't put this together. When I was in the McGee unit, you can't have your phone or anything like that. You can't, no contact with right. the outside world. And they have a big rec room in there. And I noticed all these pictures on the table. And I'm like, what are those for? And there's like coloring therapy. So I started coloring. I do it to this day. I buy coloring books, adult coloring books and stuff, and it's a very good therapy. You know, it takes your mind off stuff. You don't focus on anything. And, you know, I still love my music. I'll play music while I'm doing it, and it just, it helps. It helps. You know, it takes your mind off of stuff. And like we were talking before the show, even during the football games now, once in a while I'll sit there and be, a beer commercial, come on. And that can be a trigger.
They play beer commercials during football games? I've never seen one.
Right, beer, pretzels, whatever. But I mean, that can become a trigger. I mean, there was a time, you know, going to watch football and drink beer. It's what a guy does. But, you know, I see those commercials and I just shake my head and it's like, I wouldn't drink that beer anyways. But
right.
that just wasn't my beer of choice. But it could be a trigger. I mean, little things can be, anything can be a trigger. You know, you can get angry at something and be, you know, I'm going to go have a drink. So.
Now, you said with the bariatric surgery, you were able to, you know, sort of wake up and be sober. And so you never really had to deal with hangovers.
I never once had a hangover. I can honestly tell you that. I never once had a hangover.
I mean, and that's like... That's like the big guardrail right there, right. You know, the hangover. I had a...
I got up every morning and, you know, some days it'd be like, ugh. But, you know, I wouldn't call it a hangover because I'd have a cup of coffee and I'd feel fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I never threw up.
Wow.
Which is crazy. So, which is crazy. Like I said, it goes right into the system and I never got throw up sick.
But, I mean, the guardrail of the potential hangover, I mean, I had... buddies invite me out, mm-hmm. not for the most recent Patriots game, but the first one that was at mm-hmm. 8 o'clock on a Sunday. And I'm like, I don't really want to feel like crap on Monday.
I got to go to work Monday morning.
Yeah, you know, I get up, go to work, but you just have that, well, you wouldn't even know. I mean, you just have that feeling all day where you're just sort of not all there. And I'm like, I got a lot going on. I want to avoid that. But to not have that, even as a potential, to have a cup of coffee and just be fine, I mean, that must make things, that had to have made things worse.
I made a promise to myself when I started this that, this is the only time in my life I've ever been in recovery or any sort of program, and it's going to be the last time I'm going to do this. It's a lot of hard work. It is. I mean, there's a lot of hard work. Like I said, I got my, just for fun, I got an anger management certificate. I've learned a lot. There's a brain injury support group. I've learned a lot through that. Just all the other groups we do. I mean, there's a different group every day. You know, we start off every morning. Every other day we do an AA meeting and then an NA meeting. They're pretty much the same thing. You know, an alcoholic can be at an NA meeting and an addict can be at an AA meeting. It's the support you're looking for. But all these different groups and different things that we talk about and we learn and the videos we watch, and they're very, very beneficial. The program's helped me. It has. And I'm not going to say it hasn't.
And you're 127 days sober.
127 days sober today.
And, you know, you started, you know, after a small stroke back in 2019, and we're here with Mike Kozik this morning here on WTBR Morning Drive. I'm Bob Heck. And then the pandemic sort of exasperated things.
Sure.
Was there a certain point where you looked at it and said, oh, yeah, I have a problem? Or, you know, did it take you longer than it should have? Or, because there's always that point where you seem to be like,
I think I'm just
having a few beers.
Hey, I think you know you have a problem when people around you start telling you have a problem. I
mean, so that's what it took for you?
It did take that. I mean, I always knew I was drinking heavy, and it was, I don't want to say I was in denial, because I really wasn't. I just didn't want to get help. I just did not want to seek help. And then when people start telling you got a drinking problem, it's just like, you don't want to hear it. You just don't. They're not going to fix you. You know, they tried to do an intervention with my family, with me, and it's like, I wouldn't have any of it. You know, I have always marched to the beat of my own drum, and I'm always going to. But now that I've got my sobriety, I'm the one that's got to take control of that. I will tell you something, though. I've had people around me that said, you've changed since you've gotten sober. I said, how have I changed? They said, you're different. I said, that's the whole point of sobriety, is to change and be different. What some people around me don't like is that I've set boundaries, and you have to set boundaries. You know, if people are going to drink around you, I'm not going to be there. I can't be around alcohol and, you know, watch people drinking like we talked about earlier. If I went to a Super Bowl party, I won't go to a Super Bowl party unless I'm hosting it. I just don't want to be there. I don't want to be around people drinking. I don't want to be around alcohol. I'm not going to begrudge anybody that does that, because you do what you want.
Right.
But I'm not going to. And, you know, I've had to set boundaries with alcohol. I've had to set boundaries with, you know, friends. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do the other thing. But if you're going to do it, don't ask me to come along, because I'm not going to be your designated driver because I'm sober. I'm not going to sit in a bar with you. I'm just not. So, you know, a lot of people don't like that.
Right. I mean, is that a temptation thing, or is that more of a I just don't want to see it thing?
It's both. It's both. I mean, you know, if I go, I'm still in early recovery, 126.
Yes.
It's a small number, but it's a big number at the same time, especially for a recovering alcoholic. I mean, I won't go sit in a bar. I just won't, you know. And yes, there'd be temptations if I went in, but that would be my problem. You know, if I walk through the bar door knowing that I don't have to, that's on me.
Oh, of course.
What I do when I'm inside there is completely different, you know, and I'm just not. Nor do I want to, you know.
Right. Oh. No, I mean, I get that, but it's more the you go to a friend's party, and I mean, there's obviously going to be drinking there.
It's up to me. It's up to me whether I drink or not. But if it's there, being an alcoholic, you know, you can say, well, I can have one.
Has that thought ever crossed your mind?
Absolutely. Still does to this day. You know, well, I can have one. And that's how alcoholism starts again. You know, you relapse. You have one leads to two leads to four. Next thing you know, you're, you know, a 12-pack in or whatnot or whatever your beverage of choice is or drug of choice is. It's just not worth it. I don't want to start a recovery over again. I just don't. It's been a lot of hard work to get to where I am. I will say this. They have a thing. It's called post-acute withdrawal symptoms. And I just went through it. And it's not cravings or anything like that. I had insomnia for about a week. I did not sleep at all. And it was just nuts. And it was driving me crazy. And I ended up talking to a different counselor about it. I said, I'm not sleeping. And she explained the whole post-acute withdrawal syndrome. And she goes, that's what you're going through right now. And it was right about the 95-day mark.
Really? That late?
Yep. And I started, she gave me some trazodone and it worked, and I've since gone off of it. I'm sleeping better now, but it's just a lot of things happen. We talk about this all the time. You know, you get to about the 90 day and then something will happen and then something else can happen. And, like I said, I suffered insomnia. Other people suffer, you know, what they'll call quote-unquote drug dreams where they think about using again. I haven't had one, you know, an alcohol dream or anything like that, but, you know, they'll talk about that, and it's like, it's very real. I wake up thinking that I did something. So
oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Some of the addicts and groups talk about that. They'll come in and, you know, they'll be like, I had a drug dream last night, and I actually woke up thinking that I had smoked crack. I was scared to death, you know. And I'm subject to a random drug test, as is everybody there, and obviously I've been clean, so I'm not really worried about it. But it's a good feeling to know when you're doing a drug screen that it's going to be clean.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll tell you a story off the air about that.
I mean, that's wild that, yep. You know, first off, like all that time later that something mm-hmm. happens, and then to find out that. You know, you have a dream that feels so real. Mm-hmm. It feels like you used again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I understand when, you know, what they're talking about, too. And I haven't had one yet. I don't want one because I believe they're very, very scary things. I haven't been a good sleeper in years. But, you know, the fact that, but. I can honestly tell you, I went about a week where, you know, I would go to sleep for about a half hour and I'd wake up and I'd be up again all night. And
like, what do you do in that circumstance? Because now you've got more hours in the day to fill.
See, I would say if I wasn't in recovery during it, you would think about it too. I'd be like, I wish the package store was open. I'd go get something to do. I'd be able to sleep. You know, but, you know, 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night, you know, it's like they're not open. What do I do? So, you know, I would either put on headphones or I would find something to do. I'd try to make myself tired. I'd lay in bed. I'd toss and turn. And usually I just end up going and watch TV.
That's like, you know, you could put me through anything.
Mm-hmm.
But if you deprive my sleep, like I'll tell you who told. I'll tell you where everything is. I'll give up all the government secrets. I mean, it's just wild to go mm-hmm. through that.
Very wild.
Do you have a message for people who may be listening this morning that are sort of going through something similar to what you were going through?
I will say this. The treatment I got at McGee, I never thought in my life I would see myself in a facility like that. That's a very good facility. You get great treatment in there. They can guide you to where you need to go. And it's never too late to take that first step. You know, today can be day one of sobriety. I mean, 24 hours is a milestone. Not drinking for 24 hours is a milestone. You know, you got to live for every day. One day at a time, as they say, 1 hour at a time, 1 minute at a time. You know, as long as you want to do it, there are support networks out there. There are very good support networks out there. Ask for help. What can it hurt? You know, whether you go through recovery, you know, and you get 100 days and you relapse, you can always go back. You can always go back and get the help again. You know, I know people, I've talked to people that have been in some of these facilities. You know, they're like, this is my fifth time through here. I was like, wow. You know, yeah. It's like, this is the, and you know, they'll say, finally, this is the time I need to do it. And, you know, at my age, I don't think I would have another recovery in me. Like, this has been hard work. It's been work. And I don't want another recovery. I mean, the stuff that I've gotten back, and I'm going to use this, that the buzz I get from having to love my daughter back is better than any buzz I had from using alcohol. And I mean that.
Yeah, we're here with Mike Kozik. We've got about 10 minutes to go. 8:20 here on Wednesday morning, the 21st of January. Is it harder this time of year, or is it harder in the summer?
This time of year. This time of year, definitely. The summer, you can be outside doing stuff. Mm. You know, you want to be outside this morning at 5 below 0.
Oh, doing God, something? No.
I wouldn't want to be on Lake Ice fishing if that's what I did. No way. So, yeah, this time of year, you know, with it getting dark early, and it can be depressing. It can be depressing. So, yeah, this was definitely the hardest time of the year. You know, during the summer, you could always find something to do, mm-hmm. but there was always time to drink, too.
And particularly over the holidays as well, yeah. I would imagine it was difficult.
Yep. Very.
Yeah.
Especially when people used to give you a bottle for Christmas. That's just like, you're enabling me, but now I don't have to go to the package store.
Look at what I got. Saves me a trip. what do you have going on today? Is there
I've got an appointment this afternoon. I got to get up to BCC. I was accepted into a program up there. I want to take the addiction counseling education, try to get a certificate in that, and maybe become a counselor. That's about a year program, so I got to get up to the college today and talk to the people about classes and stuff like that.
Amazing.
So,
and counselors, as you were going through, did you feel those who had an addiction were more effective, or did you not really know who?
One thing I want to say about the Alternative Living Center, everybody that's a counselor there has been through that program, and everybody's an addict of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
They get what you're going through. That's what makes it very personable, I guess I want to say. You know, knowing that my counselor that I'm going in to talk to was an addict of some sort, as was everybody in there. I think that's what makes it a very successful program, is that these people know. You know, it's not like somebody coming out of college, you know, telling you, you know, I'm an addiction specialist. And how can you be a specialist if you never had a problem? You know, and I'm not begrudging anybody for getting an education mm-hmm. in that, but I think it's better that the counselors we have been through and walked, you know, driven the same road. You know, whether you're an opiate addict or an alcoholic, the roads are the same. You know, and the end result's the same. Getting to sobriety one way or another.
Yeah. So, you're going to BCC. You're just sort of starting that journey, right?
Yep.
And you said your daughter goes there?
My daughter does go there, yeah. She's in her second year, so she'll be graduating this year. So, I'm proud of her. She wants to do forensic science of some sort. So I'm happy for her. She's majoring in criminal justice, so we'll see where that gets her. But the fact my daughter tells me maybe she'll be a cop, I mean, that floors me.
Hey, well, you can guarantee that's not going to be taken over by AI, you would think.
No.
You think that'd be a safe job to go into. I sort of got off track. I mean, it's weird, these morning hours. It's just like yesterday I went home and crashed, mm-hmm. you know, towards the end of the day. The previous week I had all kinds of energy. It's just the weirdest thing, you know. And the cold doesn't help.
No.
The cold doesn't help.
No, does not help at all. I said the cold days would be a good day. Let's go down and get a pint of brandy and sit home and drink that.
Mm. So
one thing I do want to this is something we had just talked about the other day. You find yourself, when you're an alcoholic, you go in and you want to find, especially if you're
had the problem like I had, you'll go into a package store and you will find something with the highest amount of alcohol content, whether you want it or not. You want
really?
You want the alcohol. You want the alcohol. It doesn't matter what it is. I mean, I would drink stuff I would never drink, and it was like, ugh, this is gross, but I drink it anyways just for the alcohol.
Really? Because it seemed like you had a good thing. Not, I mean, I don't want to call it a good thing, but it seemed like you had, for lack of a better term, a good thing going with the Twisted Teas. You would like bump it up?
Yep. You would bump it up.
Why is that?
I have no idea. No idea whatsoever. I think it's because you want the alcohol. Let's see what I can do.
Did you ever feel like your tolerance increased?
Oh, my tolerance definitely increased. Definitely increased.
Even with the bariatric surgery? Yep. I mean, did you get to a point where that first half beer didn't give you that same buzz anymore?
Yes, I did. It would probably be a beer, maybe two full ones, and the buzz would come on, but I told you off air what I was drinking, and it was excessive. So, I'm lucky about, you know, I had tests and my liver is fine. Surprisingly, my liver's still healthy. So I'm lucky for that. I'm lucky to have my health back.
Now, you mentioned you're diabetic. Did the alcohol get you there, or were you previously, did that happen before?
No, the alcohol, I've been a diabetic since I was, I think, 30. I was diagnosed just short of my 30th birthday. And the alcohol I knew wasn't helping. But
of course.
The problem came, and I just didn't care. I mean, I even stopped taking my medicine, which is dangerous. I mean, I, for all intents and purposes, I should be dead. I should be, and I'm not. So I'm fortunate for that. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I've gotten, you know, the love of my daughter back. I've gained some of my friends back. You know, I've reached out to ones, you know, that I know I've hurt. And I've done all I can do, whether they want me back or not. I did that damage. I accept I did that damage. If I don't get them back, that's my fault. That was my own doing.
Mike Kozik. Mike, thank you so much for joining us this morning
and
talking about this. I know it's deeply personal, and you've been open on Facebook. And do you think, you know, your openness, I mean, I think so. I think your openness is going to help others sort of realize they need to start taking their own journey.
I wasn't going to be open about that. And I decided one night it's time to get this out because, you know, as personal a story it is, there's a lot of alcoholics out there. And there's a lot of people that have actually reached out to me and said, I didn't know you had that problem. And I'm like, a lot of people didn't. I didn't want people to know, you know, and that was my problem. But having the journey and being on that road, if I can get the message out and one person gets helped, I've helped one person. So, and that's what I'm trying to do with those messages.
Well, again, thank you for coming on and sharing your story this morning, Mike. We really appreciate it. We're so thrilled and honored that WTBR and having your show. Mike hosts The Blade Mondays from noon to 2 here on WTBR. How important that's been to a part of your journey as well. And it really, you know, we do a lot of cool things here at WTBR, and you don't think of some of the cool things like that this little radio station accomplishes.
No, everybody here has been supportive, and, you know, when I told Sean and you and Dave that I, what I was going through, and none of you have judged, and I really appreciate that. I've gotten the help, and, you know, I'm still welcome here, and I was really worried about that. I'm still welcome here, and I believe since I've gotten sober, my shows have gotten better. And I really enjoy coming here. This is an important part of my recovery. You know, it's only 2 hours a week, but still it's 2 hours a week. And once in a while, I'll come in with Michelle and do her show on Tuesday with her. I did it yesterday because she was out. She's under the weather. She's really sick. But I like coming here. This is very important to me.
Mike Kozik, thank you so much for coming on and joining us this morning. Sean Sayre has the rest of the week. I will be back with you next Tuesday here on Morning Drive here on WTBR. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day. Stay warm out there.